Our reading is another one from our hymnal, and it's one that my family uses for a grace, sometimes before meals. And when I had cancer and was really worried I was going to die, this always used to choke me up. But now that I've been well for 9 years, I can get through it without tears, but it's very moving. Beauty is before me, and beauty behind me. Above me and below me hovers the beautiful. I am surrounded by it. I am immersed in it. In my youth, I am aware of it. And in old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail. In beauty, it is begun. In beauty, it is ended. And again, that's from number 682 in our hymnal. Now it's time for our presentation by my husband, Albert Wolliver. I'm going to introduce him. Albert is very modest, and he would never boast or brag or tell you about himself. So I am going to do that. He did not ask me to, but I want to. In 1992, when Albert and I started dating, he told me about his background in photography. So when I saw his photos, I was kind of taken aback. Most of these were not beautiful at all. What the heck? I remember one shot of a Toronto intersection that I thought would be better if it at least didn't have all those streetcar wires in it. Didn't he know how to crop? I was surprised to learn that he wanted the wires to be in the photo. The wires were the point. Photographers call elements like that information. And sometimes they like a whole lot of information in one shot. Clearly there were things I did not understand. Albert did a degree in photography at Ryerson in Toronto in the 1980s. His second year there, he and his friend Bill opened a small photo gallery, which they ran for several years. One of their first shows was the work of their classmate, Ed Bertinsky, and it was his first show. Bertinsky became one of the most famous landscape photographers in North America. He documents climate change, and he was profiled last year in the New Yorker. Albert did not become one of the best-known photographers in North America, but he kept taking pictures. In the early years of our marriage, he had a photo lab in Toronto, working for clients like the NHL Players Association and a bunch of fashion photographers. Since we moved to Nova Scotia, photography has been an avocation for him rather than a career. I admire the way he has thus demonstrated for our daughters that your creative passion can be hugely important to you, even if it's not the way you're making money. He takes his camera everywhere, I mean everywhere, which I find both admirable and highly exasperating. Last year, Albert had a solo gallery show in Toronto, featuring a lot of his shots from his Toronto years. It was reviewed glowingly in the Toronto Star, and he was featured on a CBC Toronto TV show. He participates in lots of online forums and curated groups and has self-published several books. Most recently has had a photo bought by the University of Toronto Press for their use as a textbook cover. When we were first dating, I asked him how I could take better pictures. He looked at my photos and advised me to pay attention to what I was including at the very corners of the frame. Immediately, my pictures improved. Living with Albert for 25 years, though, I have learned that photography will always remain a mystery to me. Some people get it, but clearly, I really don't. One thing I know is that it's somehow not about a sharp lens or a stunning scene. It's both less and much more than that. It's about connection. It's about heart.
Abbott? Taking photographs can give us a different perspective and a fresh way of seeing. More than that, however, photography can offer us unique ways to engage with the world around us. Whether we seek a new start, a satisfying sense of closure, or a novel way to meditate, using a camera can help us move forward. I'll start by reading a quote from American photographer Henry Wessel. Part of it has to do with the discipline of being actively receptive. At the core of this receptivity is a process that might be called soft eyes. It is a physical sensation. You are not looking for something. You are open, receptive. At some point, you are in front of something that you cannot ignore. For the most part, I take photographs of everyday life. I rarely go out of my way to take pictures. I'm content photographing the surroundings of where I happen to be. I'm interested in new topographics, the human altered landscape, how human activity has changed the earth. I carry a camera everywhere I go, whether it's a trip to the supermarket or a drive into Halifax to attend UUCH. This one is called Spiritual Center. It's the exterior of the minister's office. I displayed some photos in the ballroom gallery several years ago, and this was Reverend Fran Dearman's favorite one. She bought a copy and keeps it in her office. One of the points of mindfulness is that we just observe what's here with us now, without judgment. When we meditate, we try not to categorize or judge. We try not to say, this is good, this is bad. When taking pictures, we can also try not to categorize in similar terms. We don't have to think in terms of judging, like, this is pretty, this is ugly. We can just think, this is here. American photographer William Eggleston came up with the term the democratic forest. No subject matter is more or less important than another. A telephone pole is as valid as a lighthouse. There is poetry in the everyday. This was taken at the corner of South Park Street and Sackville Street in Halifax. There seems to be music in the overhead wires. Here's another quote from Henry Wessel. In a still photograph, you basically have two variables, where you stand and when you press the shutter. That's all you have. When we're taking photos, we have to give up control. Standing there holding your camera, it feels as if you're the one in control. This is an illusion. You have to let go of the idea that you're the one in charge of the people whose picture you're taking. If you're outdoors or by a window, you aren't really controlling the light. It's hard to control the movement of animals, or of traffic, or of crowds. Instead, you just have to be there, ready for what unfolds. This was taken on a cold and windy day, skating on the Oval. Sometimes just getting a photo can be challenging. There's no controlling the wind and snow. Another aspect of mindfulness that tracks closely with photography is the need for patience. Life demands patience of us, but it's up to us to develop it on our own. From where do we draw these needed stores of patience? Most of us have to learn it through practice, and photography is great practice for that. We may have to wait for a car or cloud to come into the frame, for the sun to come out from behind a cloud, for someone to smile, or for the golden hour just before sunset. So often, it is worth the wait. No one can predict the future, which means we don't know the future implications of the pictures we take. The unique quality of a photo is that it captures a moment in time. Often a family snapshot has unique value for us because it's the only picture we have of a certain family member or a special place. Taking photos helps us document things throughout our lives. This was taken in a hotel room in Toronto in 1982. My parents were on a trip and stopped off in Toronto for a short visit. My father was 59, about the same age I am now. My mother was 50, and I was 24. It's such a wonderful moment captured in time, a good memory. I took a lot of photographs in the 1980s when I lived in Toronto, capturing street scenes and ordinary aspects of daily life that happened to catch my eye. I had no way to anticipate how significant they would seem 30 years later. They show things that no longer exist, even though it hasn't been that long. Without necessarily trying to, I caught images of buildings, cars, fashions, and gadgets that are no longer part of our world. Toronto's skyline is utterly changed. A photo not only helps you remember what you were taking pictures of, but can also bring back memories of how you were feeling and what you were doing at the time you took the picture. That can be powerful to reflect on when you look at the picture. It might not be such a great photo, but you can say, "Oh, I remember that day." You may recall who you were with, what was said, where you went afterwards to get a bite to eat. The picture brings back all these memories that accompany it. This photo of my daughters, Leah and Jane, from 2012, brings back a wonderful day at the Museum of Natural History in Halifax. And other times you look at a picture and have no recollection of it at all. You stare at a beach scene and you can only say, "Well, it looks like I must have gone to the beach on that day." For me, photography is all about observation, taking the time to notice the world around me. Growing up on a farm, I spent a lot of time in the fields, looking at the landscape, the trees, and the clouds. I was observing the world long before I had a camera to record these observations. It has taken me quite a while to get back to that childhood state where there is no rush, where you can be patient and just let things happen. That's what mindfulness is all about. The house is actually bigger than the rock. I don't get caught up too much in the technical aspects of fancy cameras and long lenses or manipulation in Photoshop. And I use my camera mostly in automatic mode because it gives me more freedom to capture the moment. It has been said that the best camera is the one you have with you, and I believe that. Most people these days have smartphones with camera and video. This is a perfect tool, You don't need an expensive camera to get worthy photos. I took this photo in Amherst, Nova Scotia. After I got home and looked at it, I realized that it may have been the setting for Alex Colville's 1954 painting, Horse and Train. Colville grew up in Amherst and later studied at nearby Mount Allison University in Sackville. This train line runs between Amherst and Sackville. And now I'll give you a few photo tips. Try to include something in the foreground. It provides a point of interest and a sense of scale. This was the first photo tip my father gave me. Think about a message. What does your photo say? For me, this one says, "Nature wins every time." Look for humorous or whimsical scenes. They can lighten your day. Good light often means good photos. Taken on an overcast day, this photo wouldn't quite be the same. And finally, when doing group photos, take many more photos than you think you need to. Because people blink. People take photographs for all sorts of reasons. And whatever those reasons are, it can be rewarding and worthwhile to document what's happening around us as we go about our daily lives. Taking photos with a relaxed mind and an open heart can be a profound and beautiful way for us to engage with the world and with one another. Thank you.